This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents I Am Number 4 by Pittacus Lore, performed by Neil Kaplan. Copyright 2010 by Pittacus Lore. Production copyright 2010 by HarperCollins Publishers. The door starts shaking. It's a flimsy thing made of bamboo shoots held together with tattered lengths of twine. The shake is subtle and stops almost immediately. They lift their heads to listen, a 14-year-old boy and a 50-year-old man who everyone thinks is his father, but who was born near a different jungle on a different planet, hundreds of light years away. They are lying shirtless on opposite sides of the hut, a mosquito net over each cot. They hear a distant crash, like the sound of an animal breaking the branch of a tree, but in this case, it sounds like the entire tree has been broken. "What was that?" the boy asks. "Shh," the man replies. They hear the chirp of insects, nothing more. The man brings his legs over the side of the cot when the shake starts again. A longer, firmer shake, and another crash, this time closer. The man gets to his feet and walks slowly to the door. Silence. The man takes a deep breath as he inches his hand to the latch. The boy sits up. "No," the man whispers, and in that instant, the blade of a sword, long and gleaming, made of a shining white metal that is not found on Earth, comes through the door and sinks deeply into the man's chest. It protrudes 6 inches out through his back and is quickly pulled free. The man grunts. The boy gasps. The man takes a single breath and utters one word. "Run." He falls lifeless to the floor. The boy leaps from the cot, bursts through the rear wall. He doesn't bother with the door or a window. He literally runs through the wall, which breaks apart as if it's paper, though it's made of strong, hard African mahogany. He tears into the Congo night, leaps over trees, sprints at a speed somewhere around 60 miles per hour. His sight and hearing are beyond human. He dodges trees, rips through snarled vines, leaps small streams with a single step. Heavy footsteps are close behind him, getting closer every second. His pursuers also have gifts, and they have something with them, something he has only heard hints of, something he never believed he would see on Earth. The crashing nears. The boy hears a low, intense roar. He knows whatever is behind him is picking up speed. He sees a break in the jungle up ahead. When he reaches it, he sees a huge ravine, 300 feet across and 300 feet down, with a river at the bottom. The river's bank is covered with huge boulders, boulders that would break him apart if he fell on them. His only chance is to get across the ravine. He'll have a short running start and one chance to save his own life. Even for him, or for any of the others on Earth like him, it's a near impossible leap. Going back, or going down, or trying to fight them means certain death. He has one shot. There's a deafening roar behind him. They're 20-30 feet away. He takes 5 steps back and runs, and just before the ledge, he takes off and starts flying across the ravine. He's in the air 3 or 4 seconds. He screams, his arms outstretched in front of him, waiting for either safety or the end. He hits the ground and tumbles forward, stopping at the base of a mammoth tree. He smiles. He can't believe he made it, that he's going to survive. not wanting them to see him, and knowing he needs to get further away from them, he stands. He'll have to keep running. He turns towards the jungle. As he does, a huge hand wraps itself around his throat. He is lifted off the ground. He struggles, kicks, tries to pull away, but knows it's futile, that it's over. He should have expected that they'd be on both sides, that once they found him, there would be no escape. The Mogadorian lifts him so that he can see the boy's chest, see the amulet that is hanging around his neck, the amulet that only he and his kind can wear. He tears it off and puts it somewhere inside the long black cloak he is wearing. And when his hand emerges, it is holding the gleaming white metal sword. The boy looks into the Mogadorian's deep, wide, emotionless black eyes, and he speaks.
The legacies live. They will find each other. And when they're ready, they're going to destroy you.
The Mogadorian laughs, a nasty, mocking laugh. It raises the sword, the only weapon in the universe that can break the charm that until today protected the boy, and still protects the others. The blade ignites in a silver flame as it points to the sky, as if it's coming alive, sensing its mission and grimacing in anticipation. And as it falls, an arc of light speeding through the blackness of the jungle, the boy still believes that some part of him will survive. And some part of him will make it home. He closes his eyes just before the sword strikes, and then it is over. Chapter 1. In the beginning, there were 9 of us. We left when we were young, almost too young to remember. Almost. I am told the ground shook, that the skies were full of light and explosions. We were in that 2-week period of the year when both moons hang on opposite sides of the horizon. It was a time of celebration, and the explosions were at first mistaken for fireworks. They were not. It was warm. A soft wind blew in from off the water. I am always told the weather. It was warm. There was a soft wind. I have never understood why that matters. What I remember most vividly is the way my grandmother looked that day. She was frantic and sad. There were tears in her eyes. My grandfather stood just over her shoulder. I remember the way his glasses gathered the light from the sky. There were hugs. There were words said by each of them. I don't remember what they were. Nothing haunts me more. It took a year to get here. I was 5 when we arrived. We were to assimilate ourselves into the culture before returning to Lorien when it could again sustain life. The 9 of us had to scatter and go our own ways. For how long, nobody knew. We still don't. None of them know where I am, and I don't know where they are, or what they look like now. That is how we protect ourselves, because of the charm that was placed upon us when we left. A charm guaranteeing that we can only be killed in the order of our numbers, so long as we stay apart. If we come together, then the charm is broken. When one of us is found and killed, a circular scar wraps around the right ankle of those still alive, and residing on our left ankle, formed when the Loric charm was first cast, is a small scar identical to the amulet each of us wears. The circular scars are another part of the charm. A warning system so that we know where we stand with each other, and so that we know when they'll be coming for us next. The first scar came when I was 9 years old. It woke me from my sleep, burning itself into my flesh. We were living in Arizona, in a small border town near Mexico. I woke screaming in the middle of the night, in agony, terrified as the scar seared itself into my flesh. It was the first sign that the Mogadorians had finally found us on Earth, and the first sign that